laws. So anyway, just want to correct that. But you know what? Fear can be a funny thing, but it can be a very dangerous thing as well. So let's read the description of Jesus in Isaiah 53. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. Now let's look at Matthew 26, where this prophecy is fulfilled. That was about 700 years before it was fulfilled. Those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. But Peter followed him at a distance, right up to the courtyard of the high priest. He entered and sat down with the guards to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death, but they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. Finally, two came forward and declared, "This fellow said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days.'" Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" But Jesus remained silent. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." Question is, why was Jesus silent? Why do you think he was silent? Why didn't he say anything? Well, I think the comparison to the lamb in Isaiah may go a little further than just silence. A lamb is being shorn, or when a lamb is being shorn, it's actually kind of giving of itself, maybe not voluntarily, but Jesus was giving of himself voluntarily. But there's a difference too between Jesus and the lamb beyond that. What would happen if the lamb bolted? Well, he might cause some trouble, but eventually he'd get caught, and then he would be held, and he would be shorn. Well, what would have happened if Jesus had spoken in his defense? What do you think would have happened? I don't think it would have ended for Jesus as it would end for a lamb who tried to defend itself. True, the Sanhedrin might not have changed its judgment against Jesus, because they never tried to make a just judgment. But what would they have been able to do without the people on their side? So first of all, they feared the people. In addition to that, they were limited by the Roman government as to what they could do. And the Roman government, Pilate, not Rome itself, feared the people. So if Jesus could have turned the people, he could have saved himself. He could have saved himself in any way he wanted to, but it didn't quite work the other way around. If he had saved himself, it wouldn't have mattered how it was done, I suppose. But if I understand correctly, it did matter how he died. He couldn't have committed suicide for the sins of the world. He couldn't have assigned one of his disciples to kill him for the sins of the world. Either of those would have cut Satan out of the picture. Jesus' death had to be through Satan's influence. In order to achieve justice, there had to be sin and the guilt that goes with sin. So Jesus had to be wronged in order to claim us as payment in the settlement. What do you think a judge would say if you came to him wanting, you know, $1 million in damages because you deliberately cut off your own hand? Well, that's ridiculous. But if someone else's fault, if it is someone else's fault that you lose a hand, then you might easily be awarded $1 million or more from that person in damages. So if Jesus had taken his own life, he would have deserved no payment for his loss. So what we're talking about is the thing called justification. God is justifying his mercy toward us through this means. So if Jesus had spoken to defend himself, it wouldn't have worked. Because I believe that he not only could have turned the people, I believe he would have. So think about what Pilate would have done if the people had not called for Barabbas when Pilate offered Jesus or Barabbas. What would he have done if only the Jewish leaders were the ones calling for his crucifixion, but the crowd had called for his release? Well, if the people had changed their minds, then the Sanhedrin might still have dared to push Pilate for Jesus' death, but Pilate never would have gone through it with it. Pilate's words and his actions bear that out. He was a pawn of the people, and he could handle the Sanhedrin by force. You know, he had a legion of soldiers to do that, but he couldn't handle the people. There were just too many of them. But Jesus didn't do that. He didn't use the people to defend himself. Jesus did not defend himself because he loved them and because he loved us. So what motivated Jesus? Well, it was that love. On the other hand, what motivated the Jewish leaders? Don't be too quick with your answer. Think about it. Was it hatred? Well, in John, Jesus uses that word. If the world hated me, don't be surprised if it hates you. But what motivated that hatred? It wasn't revenge. He hadn't done anything to them. That's often the case with our hatred. Jesus hadn't done anything to them. So what motivated the Jewish leaders? It was fear. Robert Frost said, "There's nothing I'm afraid of like scared people." And why is that? It's because fear will cause you to act irrationally. Fear can cause all sorts of irrational behavior. You've probably seen animals paralyzed with fear by a bright light shining in their eyes. Or you may have seen the opposite extreme, an animal running in front of your car out of the similar fear. Happened to me one time. A deer ran in front of me, and there was a bank on the other side. I couldn't avoid it. Well, it's fear for them of the unknown. They don't know what light is all about. They don't know what cars are all about. But maybe you've been in the same position at times maybe not physical fear. You were so scared, though, that you couldn't move. Or when you did move, maybe you did the one thing that was most dangerous. Basically, it boils down to an extreme concern for self-preservation. And extremes, by definition, are wrong. So the irony of this is that this concern is so often self-destructive. The Jewish leaders were scared. They were afraid that they might lose their prominence, their power, their income, their security. They're actually afraid that Jesus, if he led this revolt, was going to lead to the death of many Jews. Everything they had worked for, though, was at stake, they thought. And why did they think that? Would forgiveness of sins cause them any of those losses? See, this is where their fear kept them from calmly and rationally listening to what Jesus was saying about his intentions, what he was all about. They were seeing this grassroots revolution that Tim talked about, resulting in Jesus ruling by the will of the common people. And when that happens, what generally happens to the aristocrats? Well, usually they don't live. They're executed or they're chased down. At best, they're stripped of their wealth and honor. So did this really fit in with Jesus' style? You know, even if he did plan to rule the world, you know, could they imagine him doing that kind of thing? In fact, what did he say when they came to take him? Jesus said to the crowd, "Am I leading a rebellion that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching." That's my style. "And you didn't arrest me." See, it just wasn't rational. Jesus' arrest, his trial, and his crucifixion were acts of cowardice, and cowards don't act rationally. Now, what are people today who reject Christ afraid of? What keeps us from really trusting him enough, even though we've said we're followers of Jesus, to actually live as he lived? Don't we kind of fear losing people's approval? We might even fear losing our job or losing a promotion if we act the way Jesus acted. So really, is this man who stood silent before his accusers 2,000 years ago really that threatening to us today? Well, why do even those who claim not to believe in God at all get so emotional when we talk about Jesus, when we talk about what the Bible teaches, when we say anything in public about our faith? Well, it's fear that keeps you and me and atheists too from thinking rationally about what Jesus taught. You see, anyone who objectively analyzes those teachings can plainly see how practical and beneficial they are. For example, one of the most common fears involved in a conversion to Christ is the fear of others' reactions. My parents may reject me. My friends will turn on me. People will think I'm weird. All right. Because of their own fears, some people will act strangely, but people have rejected you before. So did they never forgive you? Well, if they didn't, then you wouldn't be worried about them rejecting you now. You know, so if they did, don't you think that they'll eventually get over it this time? If you really follow Christ, they might even see the change in you for the better, whether they understand it or not. But if, on the other hand, they never do forgive you, will you really have lost anything? As Paul said, love never fails. If you have their love, it will get them through this. And if they wouldn't make it through this, then that would only prove that you really never had their love. It may not feel good, but the fact is that you can't lose what you never had. In fact, if we reject Christ's love because we're afraid of losing the love of people, whoever they may be, we've made a very foolish choice. If we reject Jesus, we exchange that which we can never lose for that which we can never really have. We can never be secure based on our own qualities or the acceptance of other people. So every objection that we might have to becoming a Christian or obeying Christ's teachings is just as irrational as this one, because we can have his love. Now, don't let your fears keep you from saving yourself from certain failure and punishment. The fear of the Jewish leaders kept them from thinking clearly, from thinking rationally, and that resulted in their rejection of Jesus, and it will do the same thing to us. But that's not all it will do. Fear, will lead us to go beyond mere rejection. It will actually make us aggressive. And so not only will fear cause you to act irrationally, it will cause you to act immorally. This whole arrest and trial of Jesus was a mockery. They weren't after justice at all. They were looking for false evidence. That's the kind of immorality I'm talking about. When Jesus wouldn't answer the trumped-up charges, when Jesus remained silent, the high priest asked Jesus to incriminate himself. Read with me, beginning in the second part of verse 63. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." "You have said so," Jesus replied. "But I say to all of you, from now on you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, "He has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look, now you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" "He's worthy of death," they answered. Then they spit in his face and struck him with their fists. They slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, Messiah, who hit you?" Now, who were these people? A lot of times we like to say, well, it was the same people who were laying down the palm branches a few days before. Probably not. Some of those might have been there. But certainly Jesus was popular with all the people. But this particular group were probably not just average Jews. They wouldn't have been allowed to be in the courtyard where the Sanhedrin met. And so these were mostly those who were educated and considered to be really good Jews. So how many of these people do you suppose typically went around lying? How many of them had spit in people's faces before this, do you think? How many slapped people in the face all of the time? You know, people who couldn't defend themselves. How many murderers were in this crowd? See, these people were obedient to the letter of the law, the highest moral standard that ever existed. These were the cream of the crop, they thought. They were, until fear took hold of them. Satan used fear to turn them into the most disgustingly immoral people who ever lived. We're all subject to weakness and selfish desires. And those can lead us to do really evil things. But it takes some real fear to make most of us aggressive enough to take this kind of action. Now, in this case, at this moment, maybe a better word than fear would be insecurity. Would the Jewish leaders have done what they did if they had felt safe and secure in their positions, if they had felt secure in their relationship with God? Secure in their relationship to the Roman authorities, secure in their position with the people. You know, if they had felt any of that kind of security, they might never have looked twice at Jesus, or they might have even followed him. But because they were insecure, they killed him. So what about us? Well, I'd never go that far. Okay, Peter, you know, actually, I've done it. I've sacrificed innocent people to save my own skin. In high school, I did it often. I even did it in college. I did it as a Bible teacher. I do it sometimes now as a preacher. You're just being dramatic, Mark. I suppose you're talking about making fun of people and things like that. Well, yes, I am. I'm talking about making fun of people and taking advantage of people and things like that, but I'm not just being dramatic. The truth is, if I can't control myself when all I've got to lose is a little face, I don't really know what I'm capable of when the pressure is really on. Now, I don't suspect that any of us has ever been in a lynch mob. Anybody? But we'd be fools to claim that we're not capable of it. The fact is, Jesus died just as much because of my actions and yours as he did because of the Jewish leaders. It is a very evil thing to watch an innocent person or a weak person suffer physically or emotionally and do nothing for that person. Just watch it happen, because that's Jesus we're watching. Immorality is the exact opposite of grace. We can say grace is giving what someone needs rather than what they deserve. Immorality is doing what is to our own advantage, regardless of the needs of another person. Think about that for just a minute. Fear led to the murder of the only innocent man who ever lived. You know, all of the guys in the prison, they're all innocent, right, Derek? But not really. You know, maybe they're even innocent of the crime that they're in there for. Most of them are, you know, guilty of other crimes. But even if they're not guilty of what is a crime on the books, they're guilty. He's the only innocent man that ever lived. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. So we've been talking about how irrational and immoral the actions of the Jewish leaders were, and I've tried to help us all recognize our own weakness and how we really share in that act. In short, I've been kind of working hard to make us all feel guilty. But why would I do that? Well, it's because we are guilty. But what I've been trying to motivate in us is a rational and moral response to our guilt. Don't let fear control you. Look to hope to calm your fears and to motivate a right and a reasonable response, a right and reasonable faith. We don't need to fear Jesus. He will be our judge someday, but that should be a comfort rather than a threat. Look at who he was. Look at what he did for us. Is that the kind of guy who wants to see us burn in hell? All we have to do is repent of the way that we've lived and turn to him, put our faith in him and not our own strength. Picture yourself lost on a mountain on a dark night, and making it worse, you know that there's a dangerous criminal who has escaped and is in the area. So all of a sudden you hear a footstep and some rocks fall over the edge of a deep canyon. So your tongue is so thick you can hardly breathe. You decide your only hope is to surprise him. And so you freeze until he's just below you, and then you jump at him. But you miss him, and you hit the edge of the path along the canyon rim, and momentum carries you barely over the edge, but you're able to grab a little rock ledge and hang on to it with one hand. And then you remember the man that you jumped is now right there above you, so you know it's all over. Well, looking up, you see him standing over you, reaching out his hand, and he says, "Grab onto me, I'll get you back up here." You're not sure whether you can trust him. What do you do? Well, you could hope that there's a ledge, you know, just below you and just let go. But you heard that rock, you know, going down. So why not trust this man? After all, he is reaching out his hand when he could be stepping on your fingers. Of course you'll take his hand. It's the only thing that makes any sense. It's the only rational thing to do. So as he pulls you up, the rock ledge you were holding gives way and falls straight to the bottom without hitting any ledges, and you hear the distant crack of the rock against rock and its echo. And then you finally recognize the one that pulled you up. It turns out that the one you feared was a friend who had been out looking for you. You feared him, but he was your only hope. And that's the way Jesus is reaching out to us now. Without him, we're lost. We have everything to fear. But when we reach out to him, we have nothing to fear and all kinds of comfort. Let's pray together. Our Father.